Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, 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 everybody. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show. It is Tuesday, January 15th. I am your host, Scott Fullerton, and I have a great show for you today. Two of my favorite guests are back. I think it's like their fourth or fifth time appearing. I just love them so much, and they always have a new project to talk about or some great insight into the entertainment business and our LGBT community. In just a few minutes, Emerson Collins will join us to talk about his upcoming role in Rent Live on Fox. And, of course, with Emerson, we'll always talk about politics and LGBT current events. Then in my second hour, Blake MacGyver is returning to talk about his concert of Blake Sings Barbara happening next week in L.A. He also has a special announcement to share with us that I can't wait to hear about. But we're going to start off in just a couple of seconds here with good buddy to the show, Randy Klavacek. He's going to be calling in to talk about the passing of our great Carol Channing, Broadway legend, movie actress. She passed away early this morning. Randy worked with and for her over 2 years on Broadway and beyond. So excited to talk to him in just a couple of seconds about that. And I don't want to waste too much time, but if you missed yesterday's show, it was also a jam-packed one. So good. We had author and book promoter team of Suzanne and Diane DeWitt Hall, married couple who writes and promotes children books and LGBT devotionals. It was a fantastic talk. Then my buddy Casey Lansdale came on, country singer and horror author. She has a brand new short story out that debuted yesterday. And then for the first time on the show, I had out and proud singer Brandon Stansell. Had a huge year last year, capping with his country music video being ranked one of the top 10 country videos by Rolling Stone magazine. And it got airplay on country music television. It's a real powerful story about getting kicked out of your home for being LGBT. So be sure to check that out on the website. Go to the new website, www.leftofstraight.com, LEFTOFSTR and the number 8.com has all the links to the social media and where you can find all the different places that carries the podcast. You can find us on Spotify and iTunes, all those other great places. But I don't want to waste any more time on this chat host. We got to bring in our good buddy Randy to talk to us here. Randy, thanks so much for calling in from beautiful downtown Las Vegas. How you doing, my friend?
I am good, although a little sad today.
Well, I imagine, of course, when I woke up and I heard the news of Carol's passing, I do as I always do of any great entertainment news. I run to my Randy Report, www.therandyreport.com, to see what you're going to say about it, especially knowing how close you guys were. I am sorry for your loss, but I hope people will go and read some of your stories. But what can you share to us about this magnificent lady?
You know, what I would want everyone to know is that she really was this fabulous, fabulous creature of the theater. And, you know, what a lot of people don't know is we know her from Hello, Dolly, and she won the Tony Award for that. They know her from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. But she also was nominated for an Academy Award for her performance in Thoroughly Modern Millie, and she won the Golden Globe also, too. But people forget that she was nominated for an Academy Award, which is amazing. She was a joy to work with. I just can't tell you. She literally came alive on stage. When I did the Broadway revival in 1995 with her, I think I was 31. She was 72 or something. And we had to keep up with her on stage. She was She was vibrant and she was alive. And, you know, one other thing I'll say that was really cool was when you're on stage or in the rehearsal hall working with someone, you're worrying about what you're doing and what you're doing technically and picking up this prop and other things. And what they did for us when we went out on the road before going to Broadway is each week they would swing us out one by one and let the understudy go on for us. So we could see the big picture of what was going on stage, how we fit in, what we're doing. But in doing so, we got to see Carol's performance from the audience. We saw how brilliant a comedian and actress she really, really was. And I know everybody knows that. But for us to sit out and see if everybody week in, week out would come back and go, oh, my God, guys, you don't know. You just don't know how incredible she is. She was a brilliant artist. She really was. I'm extremely sad at the loss, but I will say we knew we were lucky to be doing the show with her. And so we took it in as we did it. And I can say, you know, this doesn't come as a shock. I don't go, oh, I missed my opportunity to appreciate the thing. I knew when I was in it that this was an awesome thing for me to be a part of. And so I just know when she entered heaven this morning, there has to be a standing ovation. So
I love that. Mm-hmm. And I love some of your stories. I mean, talking about making sure the choreography was so she didn't slip and fall and die back then. I remember it was a little tricky for her back then. You had to save her life a couple of times. You learned a lot from that show, and you've gone on to stage that show quite a few times. But that had to be great learning from the best there.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. You learned really so much about comedy and the technical aspects of comedy by watching her. She would start a line, her eyes would begin to roll, and as she would land on the punchline, her eyes would land where she wanted them to, and it just worked like magic. But you had to have that intuitive skill that she just had a gift for.
Goodness gracious. What's one of your fondest memories, or is there anything, did you ever have a one-on-one chance just to really pick her brain on anything you wanted her to talk about, or were you just there lapping up everything you could get?
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of my favorite memories at this point was in 2010, after we'd closed, we'd been gone, we hadn't been doing the show for over a decade, they called us back to do the opening number of Gypsy of the Year on Broadway to honor Carol, and she was going to do the Dolly number with us. But it was kind of a bastardized version of the choreography, so it kind of threw her a bit, and since I knew her so well, they had me stand next to her. So I flew into New York to do the number with her. We had 3 days of rehearsal, and the more and more we rehearsed it, the more I would step in and put my hand in the small of her back just to make sure she knew where to go, because it was moving pretty fast. And so if you go on YouTube now, if you look up Gypsy of the Year 2010, you'll see the video of the whole number, and I'm right there with her. And at the end, I'm basically partnering with her. And there was a photo taken. If you go to therandyreport.com today, you'll see my post about her. And there's a gorgeous photo that I just happened to be in with her towards the end of the number. It was on the cover of the New York Times Arts and Leisure section the day after the event. And just to be on stage with her again and see her glow and just be so vibrant was so fantastic. If I can try and tell this story real quick, though. The most infamous story that I tell about her, though, is we were on tour after Broadway, and we had taken two planes and a bus to get to Champaign, Illinois. We're basically performing like in an arena, so they set up a stage. And this, I've told this story a few times that she looked down in all the light, and she saw that in Dolly number, you know, we had a passerelle, a path that went out around the orchestra pit. And in the middle of it, I had to jump over the orchestra pit, like, 7 or 8 feet to land at her feet out on the passerelle. And for the first time, it seemed like she noticed, oh, that's really far down. That's dangerous. So she noticed this thing, and we finished the sound check. We're all tired. It's half hour. I go to my dressing room, which is really a locker room. And it's like open showers. All the boys in the chorus were in the same room. And I was trying to take a shower before the show. And all of a sudden, I'm wet. I'm soapy. I'm alone in the showers. And I hear, Randy. And I turn, and there is Carol Channing as I'm only wearing soap. And she starts, Randy, did you see how far down that pit is. I think that's dangerous. Don't you? As if she'd never seen it in 30 years of doing this show. And I'm standing there, like I said, I'm only wearing soap. And I'm just frozen. And as she's talking, finally I said, absolutely, Carol. I'll have the crew put a net up or something if it would make you feel better. Of course, I'm the one that has to jump over the pit. And I said, but right now I just need to dry off. And this is the funny part. She just stepped back and she looked at me up and down and she goes, oh, we're all just show folk. It's okay. And right over her head, she'd changed clothes in the wings so often, it did not faze her that I was completely naked and wet and all of that. But she really, we laughed about so many things, and I can just say she was a joy. When we would, if we'd be in a city for a few weeks on our night off, she would rent a bus, she would buy out movie presentations at the theater, at the cinema, and she would treat us all to the movies. She paid for all of our holiday dinners. When we were in Miami for Christmas, she paid for a lavish Christmas dinner for us all. She was generous all the time with us. And it was just really one of those great, great old school stars who, she knew she was the captain of the ship. We were following her. We were there because of her. And she was just incredibly wonderful and generous. And I knew the day would come. I did think in my head somewhere, though, that she would dance on my grave first. I really kind of did. Because she was so vibrant anyway. But I am thinking of her today, but I'm celebrating her.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to call in. I'm always excited to talk to you. We just got to talk last week when we had you on the show, and people need to go check that out.
Yeah.
We talked all about all sorts of fun things. But sorry, it's such a sad moment, but I'm glad you were able to reflect on your friendship. I've loved your stories over the years with that, and I think that's a fantastic way to remember her. So thank you so much
for taking
the time to come on, my friend.
Everyone, please go check out the
Randy Report. Oh, you're welcome. www.therandyreport.com. Randy has a fantastic blog, talks all things LGBT, of course, politics, all the fun stuff. Look for his articles on Out Magazine and Gay Pop Buzz. Randy, we'll talk to you real soon, my friend, okay?
Thank you. You have a great day, Scott. Thanks for asking.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Stay on the line for me for 1 second, Randy. Guys, we're going to take a quick break and play a little Carol Channing. This is, of course, her famous Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. When we come back, we're going to have the amazing Emerson Collins join us right here on the Left and Straight Show on Blog Talk Radio.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat, or help you at the automat. Men grow cold as girls grow old, and we all lose our charms in the end. But square cut or pear shape, these rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. There may come a time when a lass needs a lawyer, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. There may come a time when a hard-boiled employer thinks you're awful nice, but get that ice or else no dice. He's your guy when stocks go high, but beware when they start to descend. It's then that those louses go back to their spouses. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Stash those rocks in your strong box, for on them you can always depend. It's not compensation, it's self-preservation. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Romance is divine, and I'm not one to knock it, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. Romance is divine, Yes, but where can you hack it when the flame is gone? Just try and pawn a tired Don Juan. Some men buy and some just sigh that to make you their bride they intend. But buyers or sires, they're such doggone liars. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Time rolls on and youth is gone, and you can't straighten up when you bend. But stiff back or stiff knees, you stand straight at Tiffany's. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. I don't mean rhinestones.
All righty, we are back. Rest in peace, Carol Channing. I mean, sorry for all you audio engineers up there, but you got to play Carol Channing at large volume. That's all there is to it. Guys, my first guest has been a great friend of the show, and I'm so happy to be able to call him a friend. From being on the stage and in front of cameras on Bravo television to behind the scenes as a producer to writing fantastic thought pieces on politics and topics of interest to our LGBT community, I'm happy to see him back acting again after a hugely successful role in his film, A Very Sordid Wedding, and he's going to be returning to our television screens in just a couple short weeks as part of the cast of the highly anticipated Rent, live on Fox. Please welcome back to the show, Mr. Emerson Collins. Emerson, how you doing, my friend?
Hello, hello. I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me on this bittersweet Carol Channing day.
I know. Well, I am excited to have you. I am seeing you so busy at rehearsals all the time. I'm sure this has got to be a huge endeavor for you. Thanks for taking the time, my friend.
Absolutely. It is the most wonderfully joyous and exciting and thrilling, you know, experience to be a part of this unique envisioning of Rent. You know, and of course, I've been a huge fan of the live musical adventure ever since the first Sound of Music attempt at all of this. Because like so many people, you know, my first encounters of musicals wasn't in a theater. It was watching them at home on my television with my parents.
Right, right. Exactly. Now, I'm the same way. I'm a huge fan. We're going to talk all about that on the second half here. But I can't pass up the chance to get your thoughts on a lot of current events and topics happening. You know, you're my thought leader in so many of these things. So let's dive into some things, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Well, let's jump in quick here. We're getting ready to celebrate Martin Luther King Day here in the U.S., and especially under this administration, it feels as though race relations are probably at a pretty low point. You have an interesting and sad situation going on near you in West Hollywood there concerning a white gay man and two black men that have now been found dead in his apartment. What can you talk about this whole story? Fill everybody in, and what's going on there?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously, you can find all the details online if I get anything incorrect. But the short version of the story is there's a man named Ed Buck who lives here in West Hollywood where I live. And a year and a half ago, a young black man named Jamal Moore was found dead in his apartment of an overdose with drug paraphernalia strewn around him. And, you know, it took some time for there to be any awareness of the situation. But then Jamal Moore's mother, Letitia Nixon, revealed a diary of his that, you know, said that he became addicted to drugs based on the encouragement of Ed Buck. And then a number of other young queer men of color said that they had similar experiences with him. And so the implication became that he was getting people hooked on drugs or providing the drugs. And certainly this is hearsay on my end, but I think one of the big problems the situation has revealed is that the West Hollywood Sheriff's Department and the district attorney didn't seem to take very seriously the accounts of these young men that are sex workers or that are from a marginalized part of our community. And it took a really long time but I didn't find out about the story for quite some time after it actually happened. You know, his family and a number of other community leaders were sort of banging the drum on that. And then the district attorney's office didn't pursue it with Ed Buck. And one of the things to note is that he's a large contributor to Democratic elected leaders.
Right.
And so there's been a lot of suggestion that that allowed either his influence or the fact that he's white sued, and that led to tragically just over a week ago, another black man being found dead in his apartment as well. And so I attended a rally that night in front of his apartment building because it's a block from where I live. And then at another vigil where Jamel Moore's mother actually flew in, you know, to speak and talk about why she, you know, shared her son's journal and the importance of this. And I don't think it's a leap to step back and say that if the situation were reversed, if an older black man had been found with a young white man dead in his apartment a year ago and with a second white man here, you know, he would have been arrested immediately. I think it reveals the sort of systemic racism that can be unconscious or conscious in the situation. And if the current goal is to just really hold the institutions accountable, you know, for really pursuing and following up all the details of these situations, of ensuring that all of the testimony, you know,
right,
is heard, and that we stand up and support, you know, queer men of color. You know, if we can't, if nothing else, we can use the privilege we have as white gay guys to stand and support and lift their voices and ensure that accountability for all of the places that this fell apart are accounted for.
Exactly. And I'm glad to see it is getting some press play because, like you said, I'd never really heard about it before. And I'm a little farther removed out here in Northeast Ohio, but I did hear about the entire the big donor thing from the Democratic Party. You always kind of get that little tickle in your ear, like, oh, what's happening here? And are we trying to throw something under the bus here a little bit, or cover it a bit? So I'm glad it's getting the airplay now. It's sad that we have to go to a second person to get this to happen, but how is
well, right, we shouldn't have to get
Hollywood
to a potentially. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, say that again.
Well, we shouldn't have to get to a situation where there's the potential serial aspect to something, you know, for it to be taken seriously. You know, it's that so many
right.
balls were dropped the first time is its own tragedy that led to this situation. And so there is, you know, just based on the representation that was out there at the vigil where I was there, you know, there does seem to at least be many more people supporting those who have been working on this for a year and a half to ensure that accountability is held for resolution in the situation.
Right. And amazingly, we have something playing out now in the House of Representatives where Steve King, who's been racist forever, is finally getting called out on it, and actually the Republicans are owning up to this, which I think is, you got to give credit where credit's due. It's taken 9 terms, this guy being elected, but that's kind of big news.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, it's like he's not a new person. Like, this is not a new thing. You know, sometimes better late than never is a thing, but it's crazy to have to wait, you know, so long to acknowledge something that has been so present in his speech and his platform and behavior and the things he supports. I mean, I think he voted today to support the resolution against himself, or, you know, which is, I mean, I guess it makes sense. I would have to vote to support against some of my own comments, but it's a weird, ludicrous performance piece, though, to not act like the issues of Steve Keen are not somewhat systemic for the Republican Party in a lot of aspects currently. Or at least in more individuals than Steve King. And sometimes it feels a little bit like, oh yeah, we'll say he's bad in order to show that we're not as bad. Well, fine, but if the things you support continue to uphold, you know, systemic issues that marginalize particular communities, you're not any different. You're just using better language. So, you know, what are
right.
you really doing
exactly.
here?
Exactly, and is it even watered down a little bit? Because for those that aren't familiar with it, Steve King was stripped of any committees by the Republicans. He can't serve on any of the official committees in Congress. The ones trying to censure him, we have some Democrats trying to censure him right now, which is another different step. Also, the resolution that passed today that you referred to was really a watered-down version against white supremacy. It wasn't anything against him, so he was able to
right.
jump on board now and try to redeem himself by voting yes for it. That really had nothing to do with him. So, yeah, it's
right.
It gets watered down, unfortunately, as it is, but it's a step. You got to give a little bit of credit where credit's due. I also want to talk about something that I saw today that it just hit my hot button as well. We had a 19-year-old Daniel Jenkins and 24-year-old Michael Atkinson were indicted by a grand jury last week in Dallas, where you're from. They're charged with 15 counts, including conspiracy to commit hate crimes, kidnapping, and carjacking. They used Grindr to lure and kidnap 9 men over 2 weeks back in December of 2017. I don't remember hearing about this. I know you go home for Christmas almost every year. Was this a thing back in 2017, or what do you know about this story?
The first that I heard of it was this morning as well. So I don't know what version of the news story, you know, how this finally made national news, because I hadn't heard anything. And it's horrifying, is a given, but that this sort of predatory attempt to abuse people and in a rampant, you know, rage of hate crimes against people, you know, reinforces one, homophobia in the true sense of the word is alive and well. You know, the dangers of being an individual and showing up somewhere that you're not familiar with. And just sort of reinforces that, you know, no matter how safe places and things are, the attitudes that we're continuously fighting against, you know, are still doing their best not to die along the way. And it ends in these results with these men being, you know, physically attacked and kidnapped and abused aggressively for so many people. Like I guess the jaw dropping part of it is how many they did it. Like, this was not a an opportunist moment. Like this was a plan,
right,
that they enacted together repeatedly, successfully, to multiple individuals. And these are to grown men. I always end up thinking about, you know, what's the impact on our young people, on young queer people, and as we celebrate, you know, visibility and advancement, remembering that safety is still a basic issue for people in a lot of places, and that as long as people maintain those attitudes, there is a danger associated with being visibly and publicly queer.
Right. And I think I heard, like you said, the age ranges went from like 19 to 57. It was very random.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what's even more scary about it, that it was so indiscriminate, I guess. But yeah, that was a sad story to have to read, for sure. And that it happened a year ago and I didn't hear about it was another sad thing. It took a year to indict these people. I mean, how much? I don't know what kind of evidence they needed, but obviously there was something going on that took a year for this to happen. But kudos on the grand jury there.
Well, and it reminds me of, you know, my earliest online adventure days. I used to have a text buddy that anytime we were going somewhere, we would send each other the address of where we were going. If you don't hear from me, this is where I am. And then like text and be like, okay, done, I'm fine. You know, that like engage in life and get, however you choose, but be thoughtful and aware of the potential dangers of things that we might take for granted out of, you know, comfort.
Right. Very smart. I mean, and it's hard for me to say, it's weird for me to say that I'm, now that I have my new svelte self, which isn't svelte yet, but it's getting there, I've been doing a little more of the app lately. And it's something, because I'm a little older and everything, and I have concern about that. Going to some areas, when you're an older guy, you kind of wonder who's interested. And when you're going to these places and you haven't been in the big dating pool and using the apps, well, I've dated over this time, but I haven't really used these apps as much. And it's something where you do need to have kind of a system like that. So I got to say, I've had a couple times where people want me to pick them up, and I've kind of went, oh, let's meet at the coffee shop. It's a little crazy.
Yes. And no judgment. Do whatever you want. But yeah, if you're going to be rolling out somewhere at, you know, 1:30 in the morning, maybe have a slut buddy text, you know, just to be able to be like, I think I'm fine, but just in case, here's where I am.
There you go. I think that's the one thing I'm doing wrong on the apps, because you have to get home for coffee or dinner first before we do anything else. 1:30, I'm in bed, my friend. God, I'll tell you this now.
That seems right. But, well, it's also, you know, for a long time I went through a phase where it's like, I will meet you for coffee before I will give you my phone number, because I don't know you, you know, and I don't want you to be – I want to be able to walk away from this engagement and you not be able to, you know, find me again if this goes awry.
Smart man. And then kind of on the opposite end, we have you been able to see this new promotion from Gillette, The Best Men Can Be, kind of discussing a little bit of the Me Too movement and just discrimination things? Have you wrapped your head around any of that yet? I haven't paid too much attention to it yet, but I read on it.
I have. You know, I watched the ad, and first of all, it's always a little challenging when brands weigh into social issues because, you know, they're not a person and they're espousing
right.
a corporate philosophy. And on one side, I think there's a great thing. You know, they're doing it because they think there's a financial interest in being on the right side of a particular issue. And I think even if it's capitalist motivated, that's not inherently a bad thing. I do think changes impact. You know, it's like I know a lot of queer people get upset by businesses at Pride, but there's part of me that also feels like when you're boring enough that businesses are willing to get on board, it also speaks to where we are in the culture. So I don't think it's inherently
yeah.
a bad thing. That said,
right.
when you're weighing into like the nuanced issues of Me Too and various things, you know, it can be hard to encapsulate that in a 2-minute spot. But I thought the overarching issue that was sort of simplistically and maybe slightly pedantically displayed was, you know, that there's certain kind of male behaviors that when pushed to extreme can be negative. And I don't think any of us are short on historical or personal stories related to how that's impacted us negatively. And I think taking there the best a man can get and pushing to say, let's be the best men we can be is a lovely, if simple, idea. And I think a lot of the people screaming in response to it, you know, I'm not sure what it is they're defending, the desire to bully. Well, I do know some of them think we push too hard at saying that all masculinity is bad. And I do think that if that's the opinion, that's wrong as well. I think the larger thing we're trying to push for is that there is not one version of masculinity that should be prized over others, I think is the more nuanced thing culturally we're trying to say,
right.
you know, that like, being a masculine man is great. If being a masculine man means that you, you know, sneer at or diminish other kinds of men, that's bad. If it means that you are misogynistic, that's bad. But certainly be the most masculine man you want to be, great. Go ahead. If it includes respect for other performances of gender as well. So I think, you know, getting too worked up in either direction over a commercial is a little silly because it is a commercial and they're still just trying to sell you razors and shaving cream.
Right.
But I still think there's, you know, a nice, if simple point in the middle of it that I don't think is bad either. Yeah, if you're screaming really hard about it, like what is it about being a certain kind of man that you feel, you know, is being threatened by saying be nicer to people?
Exactly. And it is getting some trolls, but from what I've heard, a lot of the trolls has come from that Alex Jones guy from InfoWars. So if we're kind of pissing him off, I think we're doing the right thing. Anyway, they got something right there, no matter where you come down and what side of the issue.
The man that's red-faced screaming conspiracies about Sandy Hook, if he's upset, I feel like we're probably all right.
Exactly. All right, let's brush into politics. I promise this season from January I'm not going to do too many politics, but since I have you here, let's just talk about the positivity of all the representation we got in this Congress. We got a governor sworn in Jared Polis. We have one of the most amazing diverse Congress we ever had. Is that bringing you helpful for 2020? What's your feelings on this?
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, it's always important to remember to see the great things happening at the same time as we're frustrated by things that feel like backward. And I think you can't understate the importance of qualified representation in this new Congress and the enthusiasm that brings and the diversity of thought that brings, and the diversity of experience that brings. You know, we all can only speak to what we've been through, and the more versions of that we have contributing to how our country moves forward is such an incredible thing. One, you know, it's great just on the numbers, but it's also that there's like new and exciting ideas coming from these people as well is a huge part of it too, as we and I take a deep breath here because I'm just not ready. As we begin to field the 2020 potential candidates, and I'm already tired thinking about it. But no, that's great.
That's
you know, it's great to remember those victories in the face of the difficulties we're still fighting against with the larger administration.
There you go. We'll have you back on Soapbox to talk about that because that is just exhausting to think about. I was pleasantly surprised, though, yesterday. I woke up yesterday to our new Republican Ohio governor, Mike DeWine, signed five pieces of legislation yesterday as soon as he got sworn in. One of them was to add transgender rights, non-discrimination into at least state protections. Governor Kasich, right before he left, put in discrimination for sexual orientation. They're wondering what was he didn't include transgender or gender identity, and was wondering what was going to happen with that. And Mike DeWine came in and did add transgender and gender identity to a new protection. It's only for state workers right now. We can't in Ohio get it all the way across the board, unfortunately. But New York did do that yesterday. They passed GENDA, the gender gender expression non-discrimination act, where anyone in the state of New York cannot be as transgender, be denied housing and things like that. You can still get that in Ohio, unfortunately, but we're slowly making progress.
Absolutely. And it's exciting to see, you know, particularly those steps on gender identity, because prior to the last election, you know, we had so many things that looked like advancement, you know, that seemed that they were advancements that were sort of immediately yanked the rug out from under. And being the most vulnerable among our community, it's exciting to see those steps begin to be slowly enshrined in various places, even if we still have a long way to go on the nationwide struggle. And it's important that we keep pushing that. You know, transgender people have been there for us since the beginning, and are also, you know, across the sexuality spectrum, many of them as well. And to be sure that we continue to show up and fight and push and support in the same way that they have for issues related specifically to sexuality. We got to be there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well
so
said, my friend.
These little wins are breaths in the sails as we fight onward and upward.
There you go. Let's take a little break here. I want to come back another half and talk entertainment and especially all things Rent. I want to play a little song here. This is Tyler Kappa, a great YouTube channel. If you haven't checked him out, check him out on YouTube. He does a lot of great up-and-coming singers. He does Antonio Cipriotti, which I listen to a lot. This is him playing the piano. He's music directing. We have Antonio and we have James singing What You Own from Rent. And when we come back, we're going to be talking a little more with Emerson Collins all about listening to the Left and Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Don't breathe too deep. Don't think of it. Dive into work. Drive the other way. That trip of hurt. Shame goes away just play the game. You're living in America at the end of the millennium. You're living in America with your conscience at the dawn. And when you're living in America at the end of the I hear it, my song.
Hey, are you living in America?
Three, two.
I just feel like I look so red.
Okay, so I think I forgot to cut out the ending where they were just smashing around on that. But that was What You Own from Tyler Kappa and his associates there. Guys, we're talking with Emerson Collins, who is in the live version of Rent coming January 27th to Fox Live. Congratulations, my friend. How did this come about? What was the audition process like? And what can you tell us about your character?
Thank you so much. It is genuinely so exciting. You know, it's like it came like anything else. We're like, hey, here's your manager. We'd like you to have an audition for this thing. And I honestly thought when I first read it that it was just for some like LA production, like somebody was doing Rent. I didn't even realize that it was the live show till I like read it several more times.
Wow.
and I went in, you know, going, oh my gosh, they can see literally everybody in the world. You know, I could name 30 boys on Broadway that I know that it could do all of this, but I love this music, love this show, so happy to be here. So went in, did my first round, went to the callback, and Michael Greif, the director, was there in the room and, like, working through it and, you know, talking, and I was like, okay, wow, this is an incredible experience. And I honestly walked out of that thinking, well, this was just an amazing experience anyway. Here you have the original director of the show who conceived so much of this with Jonathan Larson, who's directed Dear Evan Hansen and so many other big nuanced shows, and I had a great time getting to play with him today. It was its own reward that a couple of weeks later got the, well, you're doing the show text message, and it was sort of a really surreal, exciting moment. I think for lots of us that started in musical theater, that grew up on music, you know, Rent holds a special place because for a lot of us, you know, telling your friends you love Oklahoma or the Rodgers and Hammerstein world, you know,
right.
Rent in an explosive way made musical theater really cool for those of us that loved it loved musicals even when they weren't cool, so to speak. It brought a lot of new people to it, and for those of us that grew up with it, it's, you know, I know every word, can sing it from beginning to end. It's one of the first shows I learned every little moment of, and to be a young, closeted, not even fully aware queer kid falling in love with this show that had such an honest depiction of, you know, chosen family. You know, here's this group of eight people, you know, with all these different stories who have chosen each other as their family. I always sort of loved, you know, there's no parents, you know, in their intimate life. You hear them, you know, on the voicemails, and your mom misses you, and she wants, you know, they're sort of further away, and all these kids who spend New Year's together with this chosen family was such a revolutionary idea to me then.
Right.
And this idea of living loudly, you know, act up, fight AIDS, you know, this to people living with, that lyric, you know, always spoke so strongly to me of, you know, how you face the obstacles and adversity that life places before you. So just as a fan of musicals, of life, I've been such a huge fan of this. So the opportunity to be a part of this incredibly unique moment with it, with so much of the original team. It's like we have the original costume designer, and Julie Larson is one of the producers. And, you know, to look at this piece more than 20 years later and think about how the core of it is so relevant. And yet it's also a period piece now, you know, in the mid-90s where we were
right.
with AIDS, and that journey is so different than where we are today. And so I think it for a young generation, it will read a little bit as a period piece, but Michael's really focused on, you know, bringing the urgency and relevancy of that aspect of the story. You know, so much of it is a celebration, but it was a celebration within a very specific time. And I'm really excited about the way that we're, you know, conveying that and the history of AIDS then versus now. And so, and of course, there's the eight principals, and then there's the seven of us that are the supporting players who play multiple roles. And so the pieces I do are the waiter at the Life Cafe, you know, that opens the lovely Bohem number, and then Steve in the support group, who starts the big Will I Lose My Dignity round
right.
with the whole cast. So those are my pieces. And then we have an incredible dance ensemble of, you know, 14 phenomenal dancers to help fill out explosively the giant arena stage that has been gorgeously designed. Jason Sherwood did this beautiful, beautiful set that I'm really excited to have everyone see. So, yeah,
it's
super thrilling and exciting, and it's, you know, such a unique combining of film and theater, which is hilarious for me personally, since that's literally what we did with Southern Baptist Sissies. It's also something I'm familiar with doing.
Right.
And so capturing it all in this one lightning in a bottle moment. And I think people are really going to love it. We did our first full run through on Saturday and had a little test audience to move around so that our two directors can navigate, you know, how everything's going to look. And I think it's going to be really, really thrilling. You know, it's very true to the original vision, with some really thoughtful guidance from both of our directors on the intimacy of the television medium. And of course there's some minor trims and things for the time of the broadcast, but I think anybody who loves it will see the faithfulness to the core of the piece while allowing the unique opportunities TV can bring with it.
That is great. Well, I remember you went and saw Hairspray live as a guest to watch it. Is there going to be a live audience then? It sounds like there is a live audience for this as well.
There is. You know, there is a live audience that provide a lot of energy in the room on the day, which is fun, you know, because it's such an interesting mix of rock and pop and fun musical theater in the way Jonathan wrote the original show. And I think that really facilitates having, you know, the audience be a part of the experience and give these incredible performers, you know, some reaction to play with. So our eight principals are all doing incredible work, and it's really, really exciting.
Well, let's talk about the cast for a second. This is an amazing cast. You were talking about the dancers. You know that I am a huge fan of So You Think You Can Dance, which I know you were one time, and you have Vanessa Hudgens.
Yes.
Judging now, of course, I am Team Applegate. You have Robert Roldan as one of your dancers. But talk about your cast there. You got some amazing players there.
We really do. You know, first of all, we've got like a bunch of the celebrity one names. We have Mario, R&B singer, as Benny. Tinashe, big R&B pop singer, that as Mimi. And of course, Valentina from RuPaul's Drag Race as Angel. Vanessa Hudgens as Maureen. Kiersey Clemons as Joanne. Brendan Hunt as Roger. Jordan Fisher as Mark. And Brandon Victor Dixon, who is so exquisite in Jesus Christ Superstar, as Colin. So it is a delightful, full range of representing musical styles and acting styles and experiences coming to the table in a way that I think really fits what the show is. You know, people from all sorts of different aspects of music to bring to life these beloved characters. And, like, no, yeah. I'm not saying this because I need to, because you didn't even ask, but, like, they are delightful people. You know, there's something really joyful about this experience that, you know, from the producers all the way down, everyone sort of understands the unique piece, place that this piece holds for a lot of people, and it's so wonderfully collaborative and just thrillingly open in the creation process with everyone. So it's really stupidly fun on the way to putting on this show.
I love to hear that. I kind of thought that because, of course, as a fan and a stalker on social media, you have some amazing pictures. It seems like everybody is just getting along, and everybody is everybody. There's not that much of a hierarchy. Looks like you're really putting on a group project, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, it truly is. You know, it's and that's something that theater tends to be more like anyway. But, yeah, across the board,
right.
There's a lot of love and a lot of, you know, working together to create the best things without ego, like really just focusing on what's the best way to tell the story. And I really, really think that's going to come through.
That is amazing. I do want to talk. We had a big conversation about it last Monday. I have a good friend that was on the show, and we're both theater rent heads from way back. And we love that Kiala's coming on to sing the big Seasons of Love. But I thought it would have been the most extreme and amazing casting in the world if Kiala was Maureen. Can you imagine a Kiala-sized personality as Maureen? I thought that would have been amazing.
Absolutely. She's a star, and she has trailed all the boards. You know, what I love, and she's exquisite, and like, you'll die when she sings it. But, you know, it's also – hers is such a great story because so many people who, quote, discovered her with The Greatest Showman. But, like, I mean, she is a theater actress, singer, you know, from way back, touring and working,
right,
and, you know, doing things. And, like, she's been at it. And it's such a, you know, great story to see the enormous response to her talent last year. But it's like she's been at it for a long time. She's and is incredible.
I'm sure that's going to be a showstopper. But what is something that's kind of stopped you in your track? What should people be on the lookout for? What is something you were just amazed by while you're watching all these fantastic performers come together?
I mean, I don't want to say anything that'll get me in trouble with somebody at Fox talking about, you know, whatever, but I will say that there's some moments that I'm sure nobody would be surprised, you know, Brandon Victor Dixon singing I'll Cover You is jaw-dropping every time it happens. And then I think there's, you know, some new, looking at some moments in the show with some new eyes, I think have created some things that I think will surprise fans in a great way. And I don't want to say any further than that without getting in trouble, but just some to sort of reevaluate and re-explore some things that are iconic in a way that I think adds nuance to what the moments mean that I think people really love.
Well, I'm so excited to see you in it. I'm excited to see the entire show, obviously, but I'm so grateful to be able to experience. I feel a little backstage from watching all your Instagram and what you're doing and be able to talk to you about it. Thanks for taking the time. Let's go into a couple of quick things. Today we had a huge announcement by Ryan Murphy about bringing Sarah Paulson as a lead and co-producer for the amazing show based on Once Over the Cuckoo's Nest. We have that coming on, Ratchet. What do you think about that? That has an amazing LGBT cast as well.
Absolutely, and I can't wait. You know, Ryan Murphy with Sarah Paulson as his muse can never go wrong, so I can't imagine that will be anything less than exquisite. Yeah, like, you know, he has an incredible gift at exploring things that are bonkers in a way that's revelatory and compelling, and, you know, she could read the phone book, and I would be excited. I saw her buying ice cream at Ralph's one day and wanted to do nothing but just follow her down the aisle just because, oh my gosh, you're exquisite. I left her alone because she's a regular person living her life. But, you know, but yeah, I don't see how that could be anything less than super excited.
Going to be some fun stuff. Well, let's go ahead. What's that, anything that you can talk about that's on the horizon for you that you're able to share yet? I know you guys always have such secrecy clause and everything, but anything that we need to look for after Rent?
Yeah, Dell's one-man show that I directed, Six Characters in Search of a Play, we're filming that in February at the celebration to release that on DVD and do some film festivals with it later this year. And so people who missed the tour will be able to see that, which will be super exciting. Blake has written and conceived this super fun take on A Star is Born, where he's combining the music and plots of all three films, the Judy, Barbara, and Gaga versions. They were doing a one-night concert up in March at Rockwell. That should be a super fun and super exciting thing. And then later this year, it looks like I'm going to be doing Buyer and Seller again for the third time with a theater company here in L.A. So when I know more about that, I can share that as well. But, yeah, so, you know, cranking on new and interesting things for the rest of the year.
Amazing. I have to see Buyer and Seller. I missed it when it was in Laguna and in L.A., and maybe Barbara will get her famous friend to finally come see it. What the heck? Between the two of you,
right,
one of you has to attract Barbara one of these days. Just got to be a law of attraction between the two of you two.
It is true.
Oh,
she's become a very important part of our creative lives.
There you go. Well, you know, I love you so much. Thanks for coming on, sharing your insight. Congratulations on this show. Let everyone know again when Rent is showing. And give everyone your social media so they can follow you like I do.
Rent will be live January 27th, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox. And then for all of my everything on Instagram, at Emerson Collins, and on Twitter, at Actually Emerson. You are always welcome to weigh in, share your thoughts, good, bad, ugly, or nonsense. I'm here for it.
There you go. Well, my friend, much congratulations to you and the cast. I wish you well. I will be tuned in with bated breath, and I'm sure I will text up a storm afterwards congratulating the heck out of you. But thanks for being on the Leftist Rate Show today, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me. It is always my pleasure to be a part of this amazing thing that you do.
Well, I appreciate that. And coming up, we do have Blake MacGyver coming on to talk about this fantastic one-man show of his and his Barbara concert here. We're going to play a little bit of one of my favorite songs, Mother, from Blake MacGyver. When we come back, we'll be talking right here at the Left of Straight show. Stick around, guys. We'll see you on the other side.
Mother told me, listen, child, my beauty is the sea, and my anger makes it wild. A star will burn until it dies. My earth will shake until I make all my children cry. Mother. Frozen, watch me.
Are back. Guys, that was Blake MacGyver with Mother, one of my favorite songs of his, so many to love. He's been a great friend of the show as well. I'm so happy to have him pop into our holiday episode last month. where he teased his upcoming concert at Rockwell Table and Stage. That's happening in just 7 short days. He's had that super secret project we're going to talk about a little bit more in just a little bit. And from child star to singer to directing shows in New York City, he's been in the public eye in television, big screen and stage for so long that he's just really coming into everything right now. He's so busy. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show. Welcome again, Mr. Blake MacIver. How are we doing, my friend?
Hello, hello. I'm so glad to be back. Thanks for having me on today.
I am so glad to have you. Well, I had to after our little teaser in December. We got to have you come on. And how was your holidays? Did you have a great Christmas?
It was
and New
wonderful.
Year's?
It was, yes, it was a delightful, delightful holiday season. Very low stress this year, which we love.
I like that. And you get to watch Susie and Dean Martin on TV again?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We pulled out all the DVDs. Definitely did that on
there
Christmas Eve.
There you go.
Yep. It's a tradition.
I love it. Well, you've had such a busy couple of years here. Let's start from earlier last year where you went on stage again. I was so excited to hear about Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. You came on to the show in Palm Springs right after that run. Remind all the listeners about that experience and getting to go down to Texas and play that role.
Oh, it was an amazing, first of all, Uptown Players that I did the show with, Emerson had done his first production of Del Shores of Southern Baptist Sissies with that company years ago. That's how they found me, was through Del and Emerson. And so to be able to go down there and work with such incredible artists that are so all about elevating queer stories and having queer voices tell those queer stories was just an amazing thing. It's not the first thing you would think of when you think Texas, but it was an incredible, incredible experience. The cast was just wonderful. They get incredible talent there. The design was beautiful. The theater that down there is gorgeous. It was an all around wonderful experience. I'm going to be going back down there in May to do their big benefit show. They do a sort of like a Broadway backwards or miscast called Broadway Our Way. Yeah, and so I'm gonna go down there and do that. It's kind of where all the we flip the genders and sexualities on classic Broadway songs and tropes, and I got to see their show of it last year, the day that I flew in to start rehearsals for Priscilla, and it's an incredible idea and beautifully executed. So I'm excited to go back this year and see those people again and sing with them again.
Nice. Do you have a couple of songs that you're working on or anything you're leaning towards?
I have some ideas. I'll keep you posted.
Another
I'm
secret.
Not
we have to wait for
yet.
Another time back.
Well, I have a really great idea, but I can't say it yet because it might not work out.
I gotcha. And Priscilla has such great iconic songs. You get to sing such great songs there. Talk about playing Felicia, Adam, and the songs. Were they challenging for you? Because they're so poppy sometimes, and so hooky, and so popular. Talk about what it's like to sing those songs.
You know, the music wasn't that challenging, pretty much because it's all so familiar. We kind of already all knew it. It was just sort of finding what the arrangements of the songs were within the score. The harder thing for me was finding the transition in Adam's character. Because he's such a little jerk at the beginning. Like, he's just so, you love to hate him. And then you kind of find out over the course of the show why he acts like that. And so just sort of unlocking that for me, you know, it was hard for me when I first approached the material to not judge the character. You can't judge the character when you're playing him. So that was difficult, and then just the logistics of getting in and out of drag 7 times in an evening was exhausting. And luckily, we had an amazing team of dressers and stage management that were rock stars getting us in and out of these clothes. I mean, some of our costume changes were 10 and 15 seconds long. It was absolutely insane. So that was almost more challenging. The backstage was almost more challenging than what we were doing on stage to make it look effortless.
And then you have been just bebopping back and forth between New York City for the last 13 months. You brought Blake Sings Barbara there at the end of 2017. You've been working with your buddy Jackie Cox out there. Talk about how it was reconnecting in New York and all the work you were able to do back there this past year.
Yes, that's been incredible. The really family, and I don't say that lightly, at the Laurie Beachman Theater have been so incredible to us, and our producing partner, Spin Cycle, there. It's just magnificent. And the way that they foster this sort of opportunity for artists to really do what you couldn't do almost anywhere else, and just the excitement of being able to do a show and launch a show right on 42nd Street, you know, in the heart of Midtown and the Theater District. It's just, it's exquisite. So I've done three runs now of the Barbara show there at the Beachman. And then I brought a new show, my autobiographical show that I've just finished, brought that there in October. And we've now done three different Jackie Cox cabarets, all in the I Dream of Jeannie parody world. So we've done I Dream of Jackie 1, 2, and now 3. So it's been amazing. It's been fabulous.
And give everyone a little teaser again about your one-man show. I mean, the concept amazing. Love Blake. I love that it's kind of a parody of the Love Simon poster. Or Confessions of
yeah.
a Child co-star. Talk about what was that like to write? What kind of memories did that bring back writing it? Give me a little bit about that experience.
Yes. Well, Jackie Cox actually gave me the title back when we were in college. Said to me, I was talking about stories about Full House and Little Rascals, and literally said, well, if you ever write a memoir, you have to call it Confessions of a Child. And I was like, star? And he was like, no, co-star, honey. And so from then on, I've always thought, well, whatever I call this, you know, whether it becomes a book or a show, or hopefully now it's going to become both. I'm working on the book adaptation right now. But I always just thought that visual was hilarious, that I've like written down Confessions of a Child Star and someone has crossed it out and written co-star above it. So that will forever be a part of it because it's just too good.
I love it. That is so great.
But it was interesting. It was very, very enlightening and at times difficult and emotional to sort of revisit these periods of my life as an adult and sort of put the pieces back together and see how those experiences that were very uncommon for a child have sort of led to who I am now. And then finding some of the common threads in my life and in sort of my emotional development that are completely relatable that everybody goes through, just the growing up. I just sort of did it backwards. I was an adult first and then had to become an adolescent in my 20s. So it's a very interesting back and forth story. And then of course I've set it to music that I love.
Right.
Sort of bridge the moments and bridge the stories. But yeah, we go through it all the way from Star Search to basically the present with everything and with stops everywhere in between.
Oh, I can't wait to see a full-blown production myself. It sounds amazing. And like you said, Barbara, we're on our fourth iteration here. I want to give everyone, we're going to talk about it a bit, but I was able to steal a little bit from your Facebook there. I want to give everyone a little hint of it, if you don't mind.
Oh, great.
This is coming next Tuesday at the Rockwell Theater. We're going to talk about the other side. This is Blake Sings Barbara. Just a little taste here. Your voice, my friend, is always amazing. Let's go ahead and start talking about this. For the few people
who might not
know which Barbara you're singing about, spoiler alert, it's not Barbara Eden or Barbara Mandrell, and for my straight-out allies listening in, talk about what this concert's all about and what your impetus for it was.
Yes. So this is none other than La Streisand, the Barbara. And basically, it's funny because I do this show, and I've now done this show over the course of like 3 years in various iterations and incarnations, people think that I'm this devoted super fan of hers, which is not entirely untrue. But what people aren't prepared for when they come to my show is how irreverent what I do ends up being, because I am recreating a very specific concert. I am taking you through in one evening her 1994 comeback concert, which she opened on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day at the MGM Grand in Vegas, and then closed the following summer at Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim, with a CD being released right in the middle of her concert at Madison Square Garden in New York. So this, I fell in love with this concert from the HBO special of the opening night, opening night and the following night, edited together. It hit at a really important time in my career, because it was 94 and I was on my second season of Full House, and I had just wrapped filming of The Little Rascals, and the Northridge earthquake had just completely destroyed my house, my parents' house. And so all of these ridiculous things were happening in and around the month around this tour, and I discovered it and fell in love with it, and that was really my foray into her. I had seen Funny Girl before, but that was it. And so this sort of sparked my obsession with this music, and then I found the other films. That's how I found The Way We Were and Yentl and On a Clear Day and all of these other pieces of her story. So basically with this concert, I take pieces of her story, line them up with pieces of mine, which, like, I mean, how dare I, but I do it anyway. And then sort of take you through this set list, this ridiculous concert that's probably one of the greatest concerts of all time. I mean, I think it is the greatest concert of all time, but people can argue that. So that's sort of what the show is. It's her story. It's my story. It's her songs, my versions of them. And it's a really ridiculous evening of theater and concert, kind of hybrid.
So much fun. And like I said, your voice is just so magnificent. It gets better all the time. Talk about a little bit, going back to Rockwell. I mean, you performed there quite a bit. You had your gospel brunch there for so long. It's got to be kind of a homecoming for you. What do you like about performing at Rockwell?
It is definitely a homecoming. Well, first of all, the people that the artistic director there, Kate Kazakis, who does all of the unauthorized musical parodies that have just taken off here in LA so much, she's just so wonderful. So it really does feel like coming home every time I play there. The space is amazing. The sound is amazing. It's really kind of the only room of its kind in LA, like a concentrated supper club / concert venue all in one room. And it's really special. The shows that they do there in-house are really special, and the acts that they bring in are always really, really unique and really fabulous. It's just a great place. It's a great home for art and for interesting pieces of theater and concert and cabaret. So I'm really excited.
And it's very reasonable. I mean,
show here.
It's very reasonable, too, in pricing. You're able to bring in a show like that. And, I mean, your tickets, I think, go $25, $35. And most everything that I've seen there doesn't go too much above that. I mean, and there's not bad seats. You can pick your seats out through their website. It's kind of an amazing venue. I think it looks
It's great. A really special
Plus
venue.
Plus, a place with food and alcohol. Yeah. You can't go wrong.
Right. Yes, and I encourage all of the cocktails. We must drink with Barbara. I'll be having tea like she does on stage. But
and give everyone the stats for we're talking next Tuesday night, right? It's just a week away.
Just a week away. Yeah, we're so close. So next week.
I'm excited for you. It sounds so amazing. What's your most challenging thing getting this show together, and what's the most enjoyable part for you?
Well, definitely the most enjoyable part is singing the songs. I mean, every time a new number starts, I remember how much I enjoy singing. Like, it's just, I have loved this music since I was 9 years old. And so every time I get to do the show, it's a joy. It's truly a joy. I know that sounds super cliche, but it's really fun.
There is always, the hardest thing is there's always a moment right before the show starts where I go, who the hell do I think I am doing this show? Like, how dare he? Like, what is happening? And then the overture starts, and, like, all of my love of this concert floods right back in, and then I, like, literally can't wait to jump on the stage and tell everybody about why they should also be as obsessed with this moment in time as I am. And then all of that doubt, like, fades away. But it happens every show. It does not matter how many times I've done it, and I've done it a ton. It's still, I still have that moment where I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And then it just, like, and go.
Well, it is going to be a treat. There are a few tickets left. I looked at the website today. Not too many, but you get to pick your seats. Go to the RockwellLA.com website and be sure to check it out. I'm very excited for you. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about this big announcement. I think we were teased at a little bit earlier, but I want to hear about this new project you're working on. But let's play one of my favorite songs of yours as well. This is Start to Believe. You're listening to Blake MacGyver right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Staring down that long and winding road, I felt like I could never start again. Flipping through the pages of my broken life, just remembering when. Before I was yours, I just stumbled through my feeble lies. But now you bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. And baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Looking up that mountain top, I said, how do we begin to climb? Wishing I could speed right through to all the joy, just manipulate time. But now I am yours, so I'll stop wandering through those feeble lies. Cause now you bring me all I could ask for. All that I need, and baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Yeah.
I guess I'll start to believe.
And though my doubts close in, I know there, I won't despair, my dream come true. Who knew? Baby, it's you. And though I falter, I lose control, your soul pulls me through. Baby, it's you. You know just what to do. You bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. And baby, you gather the pieces. I guess I'll start to believe.
We are back. That is my guest today, Blake MacGyver, with Start to Believe, one of my favorite songs off the Manipulator album. So much great music, my friend. This concert is going to be amazing next week, but you are putting together something huge that you were only able to tease about in December. Talk about this big project you got coming up.
Yes. Well,
Okay, so I'm so glad that I can finally talk about this because it's been, I feel like I've been sitting on this concept for so long. So when Lady Gaga's Star Is Born came out in October, of course, I was really excited to see it and went the opening weekend and loved so much about it. But it sort of got me thinking, gosh, why do we keep telling this story over and over again? And all of these successful iterations of it, and now we've got this catalog of music from three different generations of divas, from Judy to Barbara to now Gaga, that have all tackled this story and this sort of, but brought their own material to this story. And I thought, how interesting would it be? And the first idea was just a concert evening with all of the music, kind of very, very much just sort of song, kind of jumping around from the three scores. But then I thought, how interesting would it be if it was sort of a bit more immersive than that, and you actually followed, there were moments from each story, and you kind of tracked the story through the eyes of the three couples and followed the peaks and valleys of this, where sometimes you'd follow one timeline and then it would jump and you'd be in the same place in the story in a different timeline, and sort of weaving the music in more like medleys so that you get little tastes of almost everything throughout the evening. And then, of course, big famous hit song moments, stand alone and sing. So I worked on it for months and months and months, and sort of took all three screenplays, broke them down, took all three scores, broke them down, and sort of figured out a way to make one evening that didn't go on for 6 hours that you could actually tell this story in a compact but effective way. And so we're finally there to the first version of it. And we're going to put it up at Rockwell, same venue as the Barber Show next week. And we're doing it on March 5th is the first night, sort of our, you know, letting it out into the world, seeing what happens. And then hopefully we'll be able to run it longer in a couple months from then.
That's amazing. Such a great idea, Blake. I love that. How is
bringing
all these pieces together? That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. The most interesting thing about it, like the most difficult and interesting thing, is the genres, because it's really all over the place because of the different music that Judy's version has is obviously very much, it's the Harold Arlen, it's The Man That Got Away, it's very rooted in that mid-50s period. Streisand's is so beautifully 70s rock, hip-hop, you know, with sweeping ballads and then like screeching rock songs. And then the Gaga one is a hybrid of pop and country and folk. There's really something for everyone. The challenge was making sure that we gave enough weight to each sound throughout the course of the evening, which I really do feel like we're onto something with that, which is really, really exciting.
That's amazing. Now, are you going to do three different couples for it and have three sets of singers, or what's your envision of this?
Each couple is played by different people. The couples exist only in their own timelines throughout, so they're never aware of the other stories that are going on. So we keep them very isolated.
Oh,
and then there are three featured players that play all the additional roles in all three versions. So they're bouncing in and out, changing glasses and hats and jackets, and they'll work in between all three stories. So it's pretty high concept, but it's really fun.
It sounds amazing, though. That's going to be a great piece for everyone. I just the lighting and everything is going to be so exciting just to see how it transformed the entire show. That's, man, you got to do everything on that, my friend. You are impressive.
Well, I have a great team assembled. I mean, as you know from earlier in the broadcast, Emerson is co-producing this with me, and also my writing and producing, wonderfully gifted, is on board with this as well. So it's the three of us that are putting it on, which thank God that they are, because they are both such gifted producers. And once I have the concept, I just am a creative nightmare and just want to play and make magic and not think about numbers or or anything else. So thanks to them, I'm able to like exist in that space right now and literally just figure out how the show needs to be made. And they are doing a brilliant job figuring out everything else.
That's exciting. I love that. Now, have you actually ever worked with, I mean, you've worked bit things with Emerson. You've been on work together. Have you guys actually worked on a full-blown project like this together?
No, this is our first. This is our foray into co-production, which is really exciting.
That would be exciting. Congratulations to both of you. That is amazing.
Thank you.
Now, how is this affecting your own music career? I mean, your goal back once upon a time before you got so busy doing everything was try to get some new music out there every 4 to 6 months. Are you still writing, or do you still not have time for that? Any ideas percolating that you have to write down, or where are you at with that?
Yes, I am definitely still writing. My writing partner and I we're sitting on a stack of songs. It's been studio time has been the thing that's been holding me back because I've been traveling so much, and we've,
right.
You know, we like to work together in the same space, and we don't like to send, you know, tracks back and forth to each other. It's just so much quicker when we can be in the same space and get it all done. So it's coming. I'm not sure exactly what the timeline is. We've got all of these live projects that are sort of taking precedent right now. And you got to strike while the iron is hot, and you know, all of these things,
sure.
All of these opportunities are there. So, but the music will always be a part of my life, and it will always be something that I return to and give love and focus to whenever I can.
Beautiful. So you're going to be LA bound for at least a couple months. We have this concert coming next week. We have in March coming up this passion project that sounds amazing. Anything else we need to be on the lookout for Mr. Blake MacGyver?
I mean, everything. There are some things that Pike and I will be posting about everything on all of my social media. So you can follow me everywhere. Well, Instagram and Twitter at Blake MacGyver. My Facebook page, Blake MacGyver Official, and that's also my website is blakemacgyverofficial.com. So you can find out all the updates about these various projects will be posted to those respective social media sites.
Very good. And of course, all your music is still available out there. If you go to the Spotify's and the Amazons, we have the Time Manipulator and everything, all this great music available. If you listen to the show, you know I love playing Blake all the time. My friend, I appreciate you taking the time to come on today. I'm so excited for these new projects, and congratulations on the show next week.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on, as always.
Well, I enjoy having you and Emerson both. You're always welcome anytime a new project comes along, or just talk about things. You guys always have some great views on what's happening in the entertainment world and politics and so much more. Let's go ahead and play out. Stay on the line for me, Blake. This is, of course, the huge anthem that came together for a very sordid wedding, which both Blake and Emerson were part of. This is Who We Are. Listen to Left to Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'll be here to wrap it up in just a couple of minutes.
Pulling past the signpost of this tiny weathered town, the tears welled up so high inside, I thought that I might drown. Everything different, but it all looks the same. And now you're here beside me, and I'm rid of all my shame. I just hope that they will see what is always been in me. How much do I love you? Will they understand? Everything you took for us to get those wedding bands. The road ain't always pretty, and home sometimes seems far, but twists and turns. Happy ending for anyone like me. I could read the signals, fake smiles and the blessed hearts, and I still hear the whispered words that said I'd never be apart. Now I want them all to see
Alrighty, guys, we are back. A big thank you to Emerson Collins and Blake MacIver for calling in today, and a special shout out to Randy Slavacek for calling in to talk about his memories with Carol Channing. Be sure to read Randy's fantastic tribute on his Randy Report, www.therandyreport.com. And I appreciate you guys all tuning in today. It wasn't too much we didn't get to. We finished a little quick. I talked a little fast today. I do want you to check out, if you have a chance, go look at the pictures for the 18th anniversary of No Pants Subway Rides this past weekend. Happened in New York, Chicago, and L.A. It's the 18th year of people taking off their trousers and wearing just their undies on the subways of New York, L.A., and Chicago. Always fun to look at these weekends. I've missed it for 18 years now, damn it. Just when I have some really cute underwear to wear. Some great shows. Got Paris Hilton coming on. Adam Buska and Jeff Parsley from the No Hate Project. Diana Von Zarlingo, a local photographer here, is going to be participating in part of No Hate. Singer Ricky Rebel will be on. So much more stuff. I do want to talk about our good friend Kyle Thomas on the show. Of course, he wrote our 365 Days of Love Letters. He's a producer, director of that, and creator. He is a fantastic astrologist, and he has just put together some downloadable love scopes, they're called. It's on lovebyluna.co, www.lovebyluna.co. Look over at his love scopes. You can download his love scope for your sign. Mine is Capricorn. So a big shout out to him. Congratulations for getting that. He has so much stuff going on this year. And hopefully I'm going to be able to work with Kyle a little bit more on the Left of Straight show here for some stuff that I have planned later in the thing. So congratulations to him. Guys, I appreciate you tuning in. Again, if you have not subscribed to the podcast, please go. It's on your favorite places, on Spotify, on iTunes, on Google Podcasts. Just look under Left of Straight Show, LEFTOFSTR, the number 8 show. You'll find us around. We'll be back next week, every Monday and Tuesday, 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you next time. Thanks for coming on the show and listening on in, guys. Bye-bye.